This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Halfway through the program, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we are live here on TSN Radio 1290. Reminder, the Jets and the Flames tonight, 9 o'clock puck drop from Regina, site of the Heritage Classic. You can hear extensive coverage all day long here on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuke and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. This segment of the program brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Working to get Daniel Berthiaume on the line with us, talk a little bit more about the hockey heritage between the Jets and the Flames. Always fun to sort of do this walk down memory lane for these two former Smythe Division rivals back in the 80s, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. Super pumped to have Daniel on. We had him back in 2016, and he, of course, was one of the goalies that played for the Jets. Bob Essenza was the other one. And when you talk about, you know, this Heritage Classic, I realize that, you know, there are some hockey fans that maybe have said over the years, I remember when Richie, yes, that guy Richie, was still part of the hockey show, he said that, you know, there were too many games and they were starting to lose their luster a little bit. And
there are too many games.
Well, I mean, but we're talking about this one. And, you know, I'm still really excited and looking forward to this one because, well, first of all, it's a neutral site game and they don't get a lot of NHL games in Regina. But also because both of these teams need this win. And, you know, we talked to Paulie Edmonds in the first hour and, you know, the Flames picked up a big win in the shootout over the Panthers the other night.
6-5.
They're not exactly lighting it up. And this was the team that won the division last year.
They won the West last year. They won the regular season Western Conference champions.
That's right.
They're 6-5-1 to start the year. You know, 35 goals for, 37 goals against. So, I mean, you know, they're scoring a little bit more than the Jets, giving up a little bit more. But you're right, absolutely right. This Calgary Flames team is struggling to start the 2019-20 season, very similar to how the Jets are struggling. So, as much as it is sort of a spectacle in Regina, it's also an important game for both teams, you know, in that they're not playing that well through the first, you know, 10, 12 games of the season, Dave.
And we talked about it earlier. I mean, the reality is for this Jets team, you know, these types of peaks and valleys could be happening all season, especially without 33 in the lineup. But, you know, it's, and we talked about it even before the season began about how critical it was going to be for the Jets to have success early on, build up those points because they become so much more important as the season progresses. And, you know, look, there's going to be tons of references to St. Louis and what they did last year, but there's a reason why it's never happened before.
That's an aberration.
And will never likely happen again. Or maybe if it does, again, to your point, Drew, it'll happen once.
You can't count on to going on a crazy run, you know, starting on January 1st.
I mean, there's a reason why the U.S. Thanksgiving is usually the barometer for playoff success or playoff entry, I should say, not necessarily success. So to me, it's a function of a team that you need to be building up these points. You can't take this stuff for granted. That's why I asked Paul about that idea that this is just another road game. That's the way the Jets are treating it. I think that's smart for the Jets. I think you build that camaraderie amongst the team and you just focus on the game. You remove all the extraneous aspects. You remove all the family showing up. Because I really do think that plays a role in it. It's very distracting. And yeah, okay, you could say that's an excuse. But the fact of the matter is the Jets are going to, even though it's a home game, are going to treat this like a road game and have that mentality. They'll, you know, be in the hotel together, and that's kind of the focus.
Yeah.
So to me,
and to your point, Dave, like there was no family skate, you know, on the ice at Mosaic with the players and their family members, like we saw, you know, in the Heritage Classic here in Winnipeg.
It's more of a pure Heritage game as opposed to it wasn't just a Heritage Classic weekend when it was here in 2006. It was a Heritage Classic week, if not month. You remember all the lead up to the game in Winnipeg was it really wasn't comparable to anything that we've ever seen in this city.
We've never to your point, Ezzy, it's 100% true. I mean, the expectations, the excitement surrounding that game was unmatched because we'd never seen anything like that. So everybody was focused, everybody was excited, and you have all the alumni and you know, for you know, some people mock the connection between the Jets 1.0 and Jets 2.0. But let me tell you, when people see,
I don't know why you would mock it.
Well,
because
that's the kind of world we live in, unfortunately. But the reality is, like, when Benny the Jet came back into the stadium. Yeah. That got people excited. And so the connection to the alumni and all of that, and that's really where the Jets started to kind of reconnect to their roots of the city, it yes. really was for that Heritage Classic.
No question. They denied it all. Not denied it, but they were very...
No, but they
certainly downplayed it up until the Heritage Classic.
But the reality is that the people that are your season ticket base are those kids who went to games in the 80s and were diehard Jets fans.
And
and now they're the people who have the wherewithal to buy season tickets. And guess what they want?
Nostalgia.
They like Jump.
That's why they're buying your the jersey you just released and flying off the shelves.
Well, of course.
It's nostalgia.
That's right. So to me, to that connectivity, like that was something you'll never experience. But to this game, it's different. Again, we talked about it off the air. We've talked about it on the air. It doesn't have the same buzz in the city because I don't know that many people. I mean, I think people are going. I don't think it's going to be a huge number. So I think that there's
from Winnipeg.
Yeah, no. I mean, Regina's the folks from Saskatchewan are embracing this whole hog.
Yeah.
Because to them, I mean, what an opportunity to be able to see an NHL game in your city that counts. I mean, we've talked about it. Do you remember when the Jets left and NHL teams used to come here and play preseason games? It just didn't have any sort of impact or meaning.
Well,
to know that a game actually has meaning, that there's 2 points on the line. And you're getting the spectacle of an outdoor game, I think that's significant.
Joe Piscucci tweeted out earlier that this isn't the first time the Jets and the Flames have met against each other in Saskatchewan.
Right.
They played an exhibition game back, I think the tweet said 1990, they played an exhibition game in Saskatoon.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, an exhibition game has got all the buzz of an exhibition game.
Right.
It just doesn't exist. Whereas a regular season game, you know, in your football stadium where, you know, Regina doesn't get to be on NBC Sports Channel very often. This game is broadcast in the U.S. on NBC Sports.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you get your name in the marquee. Your name is in the bright lights. It is important, certainly, for the people in Regina. It's great for them. I mean, you know, all the power to them, and I hope they have a great time, you know, tonight in Regina. But it is an important hockey game for both the Jets and the Flames as they try and get out of the doldrums of their early season struggles.
Well, you know, we're still trying to get Daniel Berthiaume on the line, and we're going to be talking a lot about the history, Jets 1.0 versus the Flames, but you just touched on it, and you know, we were talking about this earlier. I mean, it's not just the records, but, you know, we talked about Mark Scheifele is struggling, Blake Wheeler struggling. Well, Johnny Gaudreau doesn't have a goal in his last 7 games. Sean Monahan definitely hasn't been tearing it up to start the season, and I know because I took him in one of my hockey pools, and I'm checking the box scores every night, and, you know, Sean Monahan, I think he's got 6 or 7 points. But
who's in first in your hockey pool?
You are. I got to give you credit.
That's right.
I was
not
in
what
first
you do at the beginning
while.
Of the season, though,
hey,
Drew.
Dave, I got a good team. If I, for once in my life, I actually think I have a good hockey team.
Also, it's October. I wouldn't start getting
that's
too excited.
I've
smarty
pants.
Spent
the money already. What are you talking
exactly.
about?
But, you know,
can I have a loan?
The point is, I mean, 2 points are on the board. Paul Maurice talked about this. The players, Andrew Kopp, talked about this after practice yesterday. So I think, you know, in that sense, you know, it is going to be a very interesting game to watch because, you know, we have the 3M line back together with mm-hmm. Michael Backlund and Michael Frolik and Matthew Tkachuk. That's been a good line for Bill Peters over the years. And obviously Elias Lindholm is on the top line with Gaudreau and Monahan. So the Flames are trying to get their top six going. The Jets are trying to get their top six going with Brian Little back
Flames,
in the line.
The
so
the Flames struggles are more surprising than the Jets struggles in that the Flames are basically returning a very similar lineup to what they had last year. Their goaltending, of course, you know, hasn't been great this year, but I don't think anybody ever expected.
Save Dave is not making enough big saves.
Well, I mean, David Rittich and Cam Talbot, nobody thought, everyone said at the beginning of the year, what's going to be Calgary's Achilles heel? Well, it's going to be their goaltending. And, you know, you thought, you know, maybe.
And secondary scoring.
Fine, and secondary scoring. But, you know, you would say, you know, maybe with the defense that's in front of them, those goaltenders will be better. Hasn't been the case so far for Calgary this season. They are certainly struggling unexpectedly.
It's almost like they could use James Neal and his 9 goals.
Well, Milan Lucic, doesn't he have 9 goals?
No.
Well, let's put it this way. The conditional
I don't think he has one yet.
I don't think he does
the conditional
either.
Pick that would be going from Edmonton to Calgary if Neal gets over 21 goals, I think it is, and Lucic doesn't score 10. I think under 10, like 10 under Neal, then I think they'll get, a third or fourth
round
pick?
Something like that.
And in 2020, that's a pretty good pick because it's supposed to be a deep draft.
In any event, when we come back, we'll talk more about the Jets and the Flames. We'll look at the Jets lineup, some of the defensive pairings, talk about that. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live here on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
And there it is. A long blast sails wide as the game is over. And elated, Dan Maloney and Rick Bonus at the Winnipeg bench and the players as John Ferguson congratulates the coaching staff, mobbing goaltender Daniel Bertion. The Winnipeg Jets defeating the Calgary Flames 4-2.
The legendary Don Whitman with the call, the Winnipeg Jets defeating the Calgary Flames 4-2 in the Smythe Division semifinal. That was back in the 1986-87 season.
If you grew up in the 80s, is there a more iconic voice?
No.
Like, honestly?
No.
Like, I mean, for folks from in Manitoba.
Was the best.
I mean, you can still remember him in the, you know, the Ben Johnson 100-meter dash. You know, he had the voice. He was the voice. He was the voice of the generation.
Don't forget Ben Johnson, 1996. Donovan Bailey.
Yeah, Bailey, too.
Setting the world record. That still, by the way, goes down as probably my favorite memory as a kid watching something live. Like, I realize we're a hockey show, but Donovan Bailey winning the gold medal, right? Like, he was the underdog.
There was a Jets exhibition game that night.
I don't remember that.
There was a Jets exhibition game that night.
Wouldn't that have been in August?
No, it was in September.
The Summer Olympics were in September?
Sure, because you're in Atlanta. You can't have it that. You can't have it in the middle of August. It would be too hot. It was September. And I remember, I want to say the exhibition game was against the Flames, which would be ironic. I can't remember that for sure. I'll have to look it up. But
if you remember that, then your memory is way better than mine.
I'm going to look it up when
because I've killed way too many brain cells to remember what was going on in 1996.
You've had more beer than I have had. I believe that was the case. There was an exhibition game because I remember them announcing at that exhibition game.
Oh, we got Dave M fact checking right now. Yeah. So
yeah. I remember them at that
exhibition. The Summer Olympics in 1996 were actually in July.
I remember them announcing that Donovan Bailey had qualified for the final, because the semifinal of the 100-meter was during the Jets game,
right?
And then we went home and we watched the final of the 100-meter, prime time, whatever it was. I don't think I'm screwing this up. It's entirely possible that I am, but I think that I am correct on that. Dave will confirm that or deny that, I guess throughout this segment. Welcome back, anyways, to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about the Jets and the Flames, the game tonight in Regina, the Heritage Classic, a game you can hear live, of course, on TSN Radio 1290.
Just as a quick aside on that, what was more impressive that year was that the Canadian 4x100 relay team, if you remember, won gold.
Yes, they did.
And they'd never won gold before, and the U.S. always won gold. So
Donovan,
you remember,
Bailey, Bruni Surin.
Well,
if you want me
to throw out Robert Esme and Glenroy Gilbert, I will.
Wow.
Good one. He didn't look that up. I feel like he knew that.
Did you know that?
But back in around that time, track was way bigger than it is now, right? Like, I realized that,
it wasn't bigger for you.
Well, no, but it was just bigger in sports, Canadians
were having an impact.
Fair enough. I mean, I can justify that. But did you actually look, did you remember the 4x100 team?
No, I was really into it. I think I was 14 at the time.
Yeah.
I remember watching it with my dad and sister because my sister was in track and field at the time.
I was going to say, please tell me you were in track and field.
I didn't look that up.
And video exists because that'll be the
Well, I did, I did run cross country and I think I came in like last every time. I did know Kelvin.
Shocking.
Kelvin, yeah. The late, great Dr. Orlico, for sure. Cross country at Kelvin.
You on a cross country?
I wasn't any good, but hey, I was out there in my sweatpants running around.
Somebody find me video of this. This is all I ever ask, is video of Ezzy, 14-year-old Ezzy running cross country. Yeah. That's all I've ever asked
with
for.
With a Junior McChicken in my hand.
Anyways, let's look at tonight's Jets game. It looks like Ville Heinola is not going to be in the lineup tonight. Him and Spezza seem to be the extra pair of defensemen when they did the skate yesterday. Is this the end of Heinola as a member of the Winnipeg Jets defense? Do you think that we're getting to the
forever?
Point? Not forever, this season. Do you think you're getting to the point where he's going to be sent to either the Moose or back to Finland? Justify Betetto in the lineup over Heinola.
No, you can't. I mean,
I think we've said that.
Well, I got bad news for you.
I'm wrong.
I got bad news. July 27, 1996 is when Bailey did the 100-meter race.
Well, that's what I thought.
Maybe it was a bomber game.
Maybe it was maybe it was Ben Johnson. Check Ben Johnson.
What do I got? Nothing better to do with my time than fact checking?
We heard you on the radio.
We're going back to, what are we going back to, the 1988 Seoul Olympics here?
Go to the Seoul Olympics. Maybe that's the one I'm screwing up.
Drew, I was 6 years old. You were 7 years. No, hold on. You were 45 years old. No, but come on. I mean, we can't.
Fact check it, David.
All right, I'm doing it. Holy
Thank you.
Dina.
Talk about Heinola,
Ezra. You're going back 35 years here.
isn't it sort of impressive that my memory might be right about something that happened when I was seven?
Ooh, this one, we're getting closer.
Yeah.
Looks like that was in September.
Okay.
I'm looking.
Look, check
I'm
out
looking.
The exhibition games.
Remember when Ben Johnson raced a horse?
I do remember that.
And I think, and a car. And I think he beat the car, but didn't beat the horse.
That sounds right. Like they didn't start from the same starting point. They had a staggered starting point.
That was almost as good as when Hulk Hogan and the Giant went head to head in monster trucks.
Monster
that?
Trucks?
Yeah, it was a WCW thing if you're an old wrestling fan. But anyways, Billy Hainola obviously is more skilled than Anthony Boteto. I mean, Anthony Boteto, all due respect, is a depth defenseman on the Jets. So obviously you're going for that veteran presence there. Look, the Jets have to consider the 10-game mark, right? And they also have to consider the 40-game mark.
Mm-hmm. The 40-game mark, to me, is more important than the 10-game mark.
Well, yeah, and I think right now, don't you have to keep Ville Heinola up with the Jets? Like, just based on the fact that, you know, you don't have Sammy Niku, you don't have Nathan Beaulieu yet. We're expecting Nathan Beaulieu to be back, you know, probably in a week to 2 weeks.
He was in a yellow non-contact
right.
yesterday.
He's going to be back soon if you just look at, you know, how many weeks he was originally scheduled to be out. So I don't think Ville Heinola is going back to Finland anytime soon. But, yeah, there is a chance that he gets sent back, and you have to monitor his game. So I don't think you want to look too much into it because, I mean, right now, I mean, are you going to throw in Lucas Ibiza, who hasn't played any NHL games yet,
mm-hmm.
or are you going to play with Boteto? And yes, Boteto's underlying numbers are bad. I mean, they're bad. There's no way to sugarcoat that. Anthony Boteto is a guy that, I mean, ideally you want him to be your seventh defenseman, or, you know, you could even make the argument, you know, at this point in his career, he's an American Hockey League defenseman. And that's no disrespect. It's just, you know, look at where he was with Nashville. I mean, he wasn't playing big minutes on Nashville. He was a depth defenseman on Nashville, and that's what you expected him to be with the Jets. So it's because of injuries that Boteto is playing right now. So I don't think you want to, Dave, overanalyze it too much. Obviously, you know, it's not, you know, the Jets picking Boteto over Heinola. It's that they just want to be careful with how many games he's playing right now.
Yeah, I think actually the interesting one is that David Gustafsson, who's the player who many of us thought once Brian Little got healthy would be heading back to Sweden, is the guy who looks like he won't be going anywhere anytime soon based on necessity and the fact that he's been playing well and he's a good player. And, you know, he looks like he doesn't look out of step with the NHL game. So I think he's the one that I think surprised me in the sense that I wouldn't anticipate. I anticipated as soon as Little was healthy that based on usage or lack thereof early on, that Gustafsson would be the one who was going to be going back. In terms of Heinola, you know, we're definitely seeing the Jets being careful, but ultimately at the end of the day, if I'm Paul Maurice, what is my focus? And the rest of the Jets team, they don't care about what his UFA status is going to be in 7 years. Mm-hmm. They care about winning hockey games.
Right.
Now, does Ville Heinola give you a better option of winning a hockey game than Anthony Boteto?
Not to me. Sorry, does Ville Heinola? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was like,
yes.
I'm like, hold on,
sorry.
Drew. Are you listening to my question?
Wasn't that your whole thesis?
I thought you said Boteto over Heinola.
Yeah.
No, there's no question that Heinola gives you a better chance to win.
Right. So
with whatever warts he also might bring to the game.
Of course, but you know,
the good with the bad.
And it's interesting, right? Scott,
you can go to a dermatologist and they'll fix that up.
Scott Billick asked about that. How, you know, maybe physically Heinola isn't at, you know, he's a young guy in the NHL, and that's one thing we talk about defensemen and why defensemen take a little bit of time to marinate in the AHL or in professional leagues in Europe is because they need to mature into their bodies and mature into the size to handle NHL play, grown men at the NHL level, not, you know, other youngsters. But at the same time, like, Heinola is a very smart player. So even if he is beat physically, oftentimes the mental understanding of the game is able to get him out of trouble or back into a position where
right.
he's okay. So to me, Heinola is a player that, you know, you may not like him from the perspective of that old school mentality of physicality and the Jets not being an overly physical team, especially if you remove Boteto from the lineup, because that is the one aspect he brings, that he's a pretty big physical guy. But at the same time, I'm fairly certain you're going to want Heinola, who gives you a better option than Boteto.
But doesn't it go back to what I was saying earlier? Like, Sammy Niku is a guy that, you know, they would ideally like to play, Dave, a game or two games with the Moose, right,
mm-hmm.
before he comes back up and plays for the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as Niku is ready at that point, right, like, he's healthy, he's played a game or two with the Moose, like, he's going back into the Jets lineup, right? So to me, that's what this is all about, right? Like, it's like you just said, if games played was not a factor,
mm-hmm.
he would be in the lineup over Boteto, right? That's what I'm saying. It's not one over the other.
Now, the other thing to me, though, that's interesting is if you're the Jets, should you be managing? And, you know, it's an interesting dichotomy because part of you says you just got to treat this like a regular game. But the understanding is this isn't just a regular game. So is it better to have Heinola have part of this experience and get in the lineup for a game versus, you know what I mean? Versus,
or do you want to keep him for the game against the Anaheim?
The
game against the Ducks on Tuesday, right? And what I mean by that, you know, maybe, you know, I didn't articulate myself well, but obviously it is Betedo over Heinola. But what I'm saying is it's not really because they've decided to keep him out of games. That's what I mean, right? They're monitoring his game. So they're saying, well, if we play him against Calgary, then we can't play him against Anaheim. So that's what I'm saying. There's a chance that he could play against Anaheim, right, Dave?
Yep.
So you make a good point, right? So it's a really tricky situation because you've got guys like Nikku and Beaulieu, and I hate to keep bringing these guys up, but Nikku and Beaulieu are guys that, you know, ideally you want in your top six over guys like Anthony Betedo and Carl Dahlstrom. So, you know, Chevy and Paul Maurice are in a difficult position. I realize we talk about, you know, wins and losses, and it's, you know, disappointing that the Jets are one game under 500. But if you look at the injuries that the Jets and the Moose have, I mean, it's really kind of something that we've never really seen this early in the season. And that includes a guy like Buff, who's not an injured player, but he kind of is considered injured player.
He's not
right?
there.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's why, you know, you have to claim a Lucas Ibiza. That's why you have to pick up a Carl Dahlstrom, and that's why you're forced to use guys like Betedo.
Last word to Dave Minnick.
The Jets are basically creating a Franken defense until they can have Dustin Byfuglien back in the lineup, potentially, or not.
I mean, how many games this year, Dave, have the Jets had the same group of six defensemen?
Not very many. It seems like there's a rotating cast, especially.
Well, especially that game Morrissey was out. Like, yeah. You're looking at that defense, and you're thinking to yourself, like, in no way, shape, or form did you ever expect the Jets defense to look that radically different 1 year later. I mean, that is a shocking, that's like an AHL transition.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen in the NHL.
Not usually, where you have like five new defensemen over the previous year.
Anyways, my final word was the Ben Johnson one is more likely,
because
that was either September 24th or September 27th. I can't really find the exhibition schedule, and to be honest with you, I don't really care that much.
I have the September. It was September. I have an exhibition schedule actually in front of me. There was a Jets game on September 25th, 1988, and I'm pretty sure that's the date I got here as well, that I found it on Wikipedia.
Well, it's interesting because it says, there's an article here, it says September 27th, 1988, Ben Johnson.
27th,
that's when
he was stripped.
Yes.
He ran it on the 25th.
Mm.
It was a 3-all tie between the Winnipeg Jets and the Los Angeles Kings at the old Winnipeg Arena.
For the record, you don't get credit, though, Drew, because you...
I said the Flames?
No, and you also said that it was...
96?
Yeah.
Well, I got pretty okay that I remembered something from when I was 7 years old.
More importantly, did Drew test positive for anything when he was watching?
Oh, no, Drew, you weren't 7 years old. You were 70 years old at that point.
When we come back, George Johnson is going to join us to talk about tonight's game from the Calgary Flames perspective. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. Of course, coming up later tonight, the Heritage Classic between the Jets and the Flames. 9 p.m. puck drop from Regina, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, George Johnson. He covers the Calgary Flames for CalgaryFlames.com. George, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, you guys know you're the best.
No, some of us are the best, and some of us are less the best, but that's okay. We'll take it all as a collective compliment, George.
At my age, it's just one blanket statement. I stick to that.
And we appreciate that.
Okay.
Obviously, George, wanted to bring you on to talk about, you know, this Heritage Classic tonight between the Jets and the Flames, and you sort of have an interesting perspective of it, having, you know, been here in Winnipeg and covered the Jets 1.0 for so long before making your way out west. So, you know, before we look at the, you know, competitors in tonight's game, you know, from what does this game mean to you? Does it mean anything more than just a regular game, or is there a little bit of a nostalgia involved from your perspective?
Oh, there always is. I mean, I remember back when I was, you know, just got here after I had covered the Jets for a couple of years in the Tommy McVee, Mike Smith, Dale Hawerchuk, Paul McClain era. And, you know, I was always itching to go home. I don't do any traveling anymore, and the Winnipeg trips back to see family and friends are the ones I still miss. So, yeah, anytime there's a Jets jersey, I'm good with it.
George, we have to ask you about Johnny Gaudreau because, you know, he's obviously one of the most talented, if not the most talented player on the Flames. And, you know, he was dealing with an illness, and he played on Thursday night versus the Panthers. But, you know, you look at, you know, what he's been able to do offensively. He's got 9 points in 12 games, but six of those points actually came in the first three games of the season. And he hasn't scored a goal in his last seven games. And obviously, you know, we expect Johnny Gaudreau to start putting up big numbers. But what have you seen from Johnny Ham and Cheese the first 12 games of the year?
Well, he just, you know, he just doesn't quite look himself, and a lot of these guys don't. Monahan's only got two goals. You know, that line, you know, the number one line really hasn't, outside of Elias Lindholm, who has six goals, and is, from what I see, has been switched to center for tonight's game. At least that's what Bill Peters was hinting at yesterday, on a line with Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk. You know, he's been good. The other two guys have sort of drifted in and out of games, and it's certainly not like Johnny Gaudreau to be as, you know, as non-impactful as he has been. The game the other night, the 6-5 game that made me go back to my youth in the 80s for crying out loud, when they were up 4-2, down 5-4, scored to tie it, and won in shootout, you know, that was about as sort of invisible as I've seen Johnny Gaudreau ever in his years since he's been here. He didn't really create much of anything. Now, you know, it's early, and they'll tell you that, and you know, but I'm sure they're waiting for that one night when he just kind of goes nuts and lights the place up like it's Times Square at New Year's Eve, and hopefully goes from there. But it has been a struggle for him. There's no question about that.
You know, George, we're contractually obligated because we're a Manitoba-based show to ask about Manitoba players. So I've got to ask you about St. Malo, Manitoba's Travis Hamonic. Tonight's not just a regular game for him. It'll be his 600th NHL game. So what has he meant to the Flames, and how's he doing with the Flames in his third season with Calgary?
Well, you guys know him, and certainly the guys in the island got a taste of what a great community guy he is, what a great person he is. You know, last year in the playoffs, I mean, even all of last year, I mean, he got his jaw broken in the first game in a fight with in Vancouver, coming to the aid of Andrew Mangiapane. He's about my size, for crying out loud. And, you know, he's a warrior. He's one of those old school throwback guys. And after getting Noah Hanifin last year from Carolina, signing him from Carolina, they put those two guys together as a number two pairing behind Giordano and whoever plays along with Giordano. And that pairing has pretty much stayed together. And you know, Travis is one of those guys, heart and soul guys, and he's been really, really, really good. He may not get the, you know, the offensive points. He may not get Giordano's pub, but he's been rock solid. And the two of those guys together, like I say, have probably been together longer over the last year and whatever it is, 12, 13 games, than any other pairing.
George Johnson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. George covers the Flames for CalgaryFlames.com. The Flames and the Jets tonight, the Heritage Classic from Regina. You can hear it live on TSN Radio 1290. You know, George, you look at the goaltending duo, and David Rittich has played, you know, nine of the games so far, and Cam Talbot has gotten into four games, started three of them. Neither of the two goalies is setting the world on fire, you know, to be polite. Should we be surprised by that? I mean, everyone would have pointed to goaltending as the big question mark to start the year. Have any answers been provided in the first, you know, 12 games of the season?
Well, I don't think, I mean, I think the reason that Mike Smith is no longer here and is because they wanted David Rittich to be number one. They wanted him to feel like he was a guy. They wanted him to feel comfortable in being the guy. And, you know, with Mike there, a veteran guy, a real strong presence in the room and stuff like that, you know, he was always kind of like, well, how come Mike's not playing, this kind of stuff. So I think that they've kind of given David Rittich free, you know, the reins and said, okay, this is your team. Let's go with it. We believe in you. And to be honest with you, even though his stats haven't been great at the beginning of the year when they were kind of, well, they're still kind of bouncing around all over the place. He was really, really good. I mean, he was really good. The games that they won, he has been really, really good. Cam Talbot had the one really good start in solid start in Anaheim, but he's not getting to play that much. So, you know, it's David's show, and it's up to him to be the guy and justify the faith that they put in him.
George, Austin Zarnik has been placed on injury reserve, and he scored a goal in the game we just talked about against the Florida Panthers. He's got a couple of goals this year, and obviously Austin is not a player that you're expecting to score 30 goals, but he's a very valuable player, one of those depth pieces, and the Flames recalled Alan Quine. Is that going to be a big, I guess, issue going forward, or something that the Flames are going to have to overcome, is that secondary scoring? Because we've talked a lot over the years about how good, you know, the Flames' top two lines are, but to you, is that just another blow right now? The Flames are struggling to get those goals from the bottom six, bottom three?
Yeah, I think it is, and it was unfortunate because Zarnik had scored goals in back-to-back games, and you know, he had points in three, and he seems to be one of those guys that fits in on any line, and he just looked like he was, like, comfortable. He looked like he was, yeah, okay, I can do this on this team, and yeah, I'm giving some responsibility. So for it to come when it did, it was really too bad because, you know, I mean, they brought him here last year after Peters and Brad Treliving flew out to Detroit just to woo him, you know, pitch some woo at him and court him, and he signed here and everything was going to be good. And he had trouble kind of finding where he fit in. He was in and out of the lineup. And this before he got hurt, was, his best stretch playing for the team. So to lose him like that, you know, is tough, but as you guys say, I mean, secondary scoring, if you don't get it in this league, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. So it's going to be on the other guys to step up.
George, we spent a large part of this morning talking about the Heritage Classic, reflecting on the Smythe Division rivalry between the Jets and the Flames from the 80s.
Now you're taking me back.
But you know what? The one thing that's interesting to us for this game here in Winnipeg is that, you know, because it's a neutral site game in playing in Regina, it's not creating a huge amount of buzz here in Winnipeg. What's it been like in Calgary? Is there a lot of buzz for the game, or are folks just treating it like a regular season game?
No, I think there's buzz, but this one seems to me to be different. There's no alumni game, which was always a major part of these games. I remember the classic here in 2011, and you guys had the one game. I don't know, I can't remember, because I'm getting a little old and a little spacey here, that whether you guys had an alumni, but the alumni game's always been a part of it. This one almost seems to be kind of wedged in, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's not two or three days of build-up where the players are there and they're all of that kind of thing, right? It just seems to be, I mean, the Flames showed up yesterday late, they had a practice, they had a family skate, games today, they're gone to Carolina immediately after the game, and they're off on a four-game road trip. So it just doesn't seem to have the same, emotional resonance. I mean, it's important, it's going to be fun, and everybody will watch it, and the people in Saskatchewan will do an amazing job, as we all, anybody that's ever been to a football game in Regina knows. But it just doesn't seem to have that same, and I think it's because there's not really all the stuff around it. I know that there's a junior game later, but I mean, part of it to me was, you know, in 2011 was seeing, Craig Conroy and Roberts and Neuendijk and all those guys from the Canadians that came back, right? I think it's just kind of because of that, because it's kind of wedged into the schedule rather than giving it some air. I think it's been harder to build up that momentum.
Last question for you, George. George Johnson is our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Do you have any indelible memories of covering Jets and the Flames from back in the 80s or back 1.0?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Are you kidding? I mean,
what comes to mind?
I remember one game at Winnipeg Arena. Fleury was, he always liked to show off in Winnipeg, right? Because he was home, close to home.
Yeah.
And I can remember him going behind the net, and Rick Tabarachi just ran him, and all hell broke loose. I mean, and Theo is only, and back in those days when anything goes, it just went on forever. I can remember, I remember playoff series with Doug Smale and Ron Wilson would beat the Flames in a playoff series, killing penalties and scoring shorthanded goals. You remember all those guys, you know, back then. And I remember one time, Flames, I think it was the year they went to the finals in 86. They beat the Jets in the first round. And the last game was overtime. And, Lanny McDonald, John Tinelli broke out 2-on-1. I can't remember who the Jets goalie was. And I see Fergie's walking in behind me, right? And look at him. As these guys are going down the ice, right? And they score. Flames win the series. And I saw Fergie after. I said, geez, Fergie, what the hell? And he said, well, you know what? When I saw it was those two old guys, I knew it was over. He was on his way down to the dressing room. You know, stuff like that. Yeah, Winnipeg, Calgary, to me, will always be special because they're really the two teams that I covered. So I'm glad that I'm parachuting in today to my birthplace for a day and then coming home.
There you go. It comes full circle for you, George.
George, do you think parachuting is really necessary? Can't you just, like, walk into the stadium like everybody else?
I don't know. You're always at my age, they may just dump me out of the plane. So, yeah.
George Johnson covers the Calgary Flames now for CalgaryFlames.com. Of course, he used to be a journalist here in Winnipeg as well. George, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning to talk about the Jets and the Flames.
Okay, guys. Thanks.
Take care, George. When we come back, what are we going to do when we come back? Are we going to talk about the surprising Nashville Predators? They're off to a great start in the Central Division. Have they been overlooked? Is this, you know, has the window on the Predators been slammed shut too soon? We talk about the Predators up next. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You know, I feel like we've started the season playing really good hockey, but at times too, lost some tough games, games that we felt that we could have won, and so it's really important that, you know, we play well at home, and these past three games that's been huge for us.
Nashville Predators goaltender Pekka Rinne, they have played well. He's played fantastic hockey. He's undefeated on the season, at least undefeated in regulation. He is, what, 6-0-1 to start the season in the Predators' net, .931 save percentage, of 1.98 goals against average. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290, talking about the Winnipeg Jets division rival, the Nashville Predators. This segment of the show brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town, he's been absolutely killing it all week. Kellen Erskine is in town. Remember, still to come in the month of November, get your tickets to see Tom Green coming up in about 3 weeks' time, a special concert series event. Tickets available for tonight and for all upcoming comedians at RumorsComedyClub.com.
Drew, is Kellen Erskine related to former NHL defenseman John Erskine?
I'm going to say yes, but I have no idea. So let's go with yes. But thank you for asking. I sort of knew exactly where you're going when I saw your little eyes twinkle.
You say Erskine, I say Erskine.
Really?
It was pronounced Erskine.
Well, I know, but that's a different guy than the guy I'm talking about.
Right.
So I don't... Thank you. Thanks for your contribution here. Can you talk about the Nashville Predators instead?
I would love to talk about the Nashville Predators.
What you just said didn't help at all to the program.
Well, I mean, where do we start? Pekka Rinne.
Yeah.
Was a guy that we talked about, I remember, on the season preview show when we were talking about the Predators, and I think all of us agreed the Predators were going to be a playoff team, maybe not the, you know, the division leader like they were, you know, a couple of years ago. I think they had 117 points and the Jets had 114 points, but, you know, what Pekka Rinne is doing right now, guys, is truly impressive. He's about to break Thomas Vokoun's record for undefeated streak to start the season. I think if he wins his next game, then he ties the record or breaks the record. But regardless, I mean, that's obviously great company. But Pekka Rinne, all due respect to Thomas Vokoun,
yeah, Pekka Rinne is the best goaltender.
Yeah, I mean, you could even make the argument Rinne could even be a Hall of Famer by the time his career's over. But I mean, the Stanley Cup might factor in there. But the point is, guys, the Predators are playing unbelievably right now. They just picked up that 4-0 win over the Wild. But to me, what's really standing out is the goal scoring, because the depth goal scoring has been an issue for the Predators, certainly last year. But what's most impressive is Philip Forsberg started off the season with 3 goals and 8 points in 6 games. He's been out of the lineup for the last 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I think the Predators play the Lightning tonight, and he's not going to play. So it's really amazing that they're averaging 4 goals a game with arguably their best goal scorer out of the lineup, right? So Kyle Turris has been playing in that second center line spot.
He's playing better than he did. I mean, he had a terrible season last year, and he's certainly bounced back so far this year with 7 points in the first 10 games.
Right, and you know, we mentioned the goals for average per game, but this is the stat that stands out to me. The Predators have 12 guys that have 2 or more goals.
Yeah, it's very balanced scoring right now. Did we overlook the Predators, Dave? Did pundits overlook the Predators? I mean, this is a team that, you know, improved with Matt Duchene. Sure, they lost P.K. Subban, but I think the trade-off there, obviously not apples for apples, given one's a defenseman and one's a center. I mean, Matt Duchene has fit in very nicely so far with the Predators, 11 points in his 10 games there. You know, did we overlook, did the pundits overlook the Predators when talking about their preseason predictions?
I don't know if they overlooked them. I think maybe they took them for granted a little bit, but I think that there was still an expectation, to Ezzie's point, that these Nashville Predators are a good hockey team and that they were still going to be a playoff team. Like, I don't think anybody was saying, I mean, nobody that was on this show, at least, mm-hmm. was saying that the Nashville Predators were not going to be a playoff team. We could go back and listen to our predictions, but
I think I have them.
So the fact is, you know, we talked about it, the center depth that this team now possesses, and we know that they've always had that strength in D on D, and again, Rene's team continues to stand the test of time. And UC Saros is a very good goaltender. He's considered the goaltender of the future for Nashville.
So. He's actually struggling to start the year. He's winless in his three games for the Predators.
But I'm saying that he's considered kind of the heir apparent to Pekka Rinne.
Yes.
So to me, Nashville's a team that, you know, again, it's funny. I talked about Dallas this in the preview show.
Yeah,
our projection show. Sorry, I really talked about Dallas as a team kind of ready to go for it because, you know, they're getting a bit older and they kind of got that window of opportunity. I mean, Nashville's kind of in that same grain too, right? Nashville's got a team that you've got some older veterans on that team. You've got some young talent coming up the pipeline, but still you've got a team that's in a position to kind of go for it. And I think that's what their move signified this summer. So to me, Nashville's a team. I didn't overlook them. I just expected them to be steady throughout the course of the year.
Right. I agree with you. And we talked, I mentioned it, right? I don't think anybody was thinking the Predators were going to be anywhere close to 117 points when they won the President's Trophy. Right. But, you know, Dave, you mentioned the center depth, and, you know, we mentioned earlier that, you know, Ryan Johansson's obviously your top line center. Kyle Turris has moved up to the second line, but, you know, Matt Duchene's a guy that can play center and wing. Mm-hmm. And you've got so much versatility if you're Peter Laviolette, right? Like, I've always liked Rocco Grimaldi. I always liked those small players. And, you know, you remember back to the playoffs, he led the Predators in scoring. And, you know, what's funny is Ryan Ellis is leading the Predators in scoring with 1 goal and 11 assists, but that's the constant there. That's why, you know, obviously, you bring in Matt Duchene and you trade P.K. Subban, but Dante Fabro moves in on that second pair. And, you know, it's almost like there hasn't been much of a fall off. And, you know, Fabro's a guy, you know, that spent that extra year in college with Boston University. So it's not like he's a 19-year-old defenseman, right? Mm-hmm. So he's come in there and they really haven't missed a beat. He's got a couple of goals and he's looked really good paired up with Matthias Ekholm, who we've talked about before is maybe one of the most underrated defensemen in the league. So, you know, you've got your second pair, you know, Dan Hamhuis and Matt Irwin, the veterans, but they only have to play 11, 12 minutes a game because your top four is playing 20 to 25 minutes a game. And as far as I'm concerned, guys, and I think this is something that we're going to talk about, I think as the season progresses here, because we're obviously still early here with only 3 weeks into the season, but that Predators top four is still, you know, in my opinion, a top 10, even, you know, top 5, when you've still got Roman Josi, Ryan Ellis, and Matthias Ekholm, and then Fabro, I think, is a pretty underrated defenseman.
In trading Subban, they traded the worst of their top 4 defensemen from the previous season. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like you traded the guy who's the catalyst on your back end. I mean, PK Subban's a good player. He had a lousy year last year. And so when you looked at a defenseman that the Predators could subtract from their lineup with it having sort of the least amount of impact, you know, from their top four, it was PK Subban. And then to your point, as Dante Fabbro comes in, you know, he's certainly been, you know, he's not a veteran, but he's certainly had a ton of experience behind him and playing in big games in college. And he gets a lot of experience last year, and he comes in and immediately sort of fits in nicely among that top four.
Like, we've talked about, we've had David Poile on the show before. Hopefully we can get him on again. We've talked about how good of a GM he is, right? Mm-hmm. Arguably, you know, one of the best GMs.
I would and put him in the top five, I think.
Absolutely. Even, you know, number one or number two. But you look at the defensemen that the Predators have either lost to free agency or trade. You're talking about Shea Weber, mm-hmm. Seth Jones, and PK Subban.
Yeah.
And they still have an amazing top four. Like, all I'm saying, I guess, is that David Poile always has a plan. I mean, they knew that Dante Fabbro was ready for the NHL after that last year with Boston University. And if you haven't watched Dante Fabbro play, he's a really good defenseman. He can move the puck. So, yeah. I mean, a lot of people thought that their defense was going to take a step back, and it hasn't.
No, the Nashville Predators certainly have been playing good hockey in the Central Division. Of course, they're still 4 points behind the juggernaut. That is the Colorado Avalanche, who seemingly can't be stopped. 8-1-1 the Avalanche are after yesterday's 6-1 defeat of the Vegas Golden Knights. That's not just a defeat. That's a statement game.
A spanking.
For the Colorado Avalanche. I mean, the Avs are a tremendous hockey team.
They're probably the best team in the league right now, I would say.
The way they're playing, I would certainly put them right up at the front there. You know, them, the Sabres are playing great hockey as well, but yeah, certainly the Colorado Avalanche.
I'm not completely sold on the Sabres yet.
Okay, well, time will tell.
I know you picked them to make the playoffs.
I know, Drew's so excited. It's unbelievable. His bias is showing through.
I just think the Avalanche are more of a Stanley Cup contender.
It's so rare that I'm the least bit right, so I have to take every opportunity I can get my hands on.
The truth is, when you made that prediction, I remember thinking to myself, like, this is going to be one of those ones. Drew's going to be right, and we're going to hear about it.
Just about it all
the remainder of the
year. We're going to hear about it for 5 years.
Exactly. You guys might just want to leave the program permanently after if it gets to that point in time. When we come back, we're going to head back out to Regina. We'll talk to Regina Pats play-by-play broadcaster Phil Andrews, talk about the outdoor game that's going to take place between the Calgary Hitmen and the Regina Pats. That happens tomorrow. And get more of a scene setter and what this means to the Regina, the Saskatchewan hockey community. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can also reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Phil Andrews. Phil is the Regina Pats play-by-play broadcaster. The Regina Pats and the Calgary Hitmen will do battle tomorrow in the Prairie Classic, also taking place outdoors at Mosaic Stadium. Phil, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, fellas. Thanks a lot for having me. Good to be back.
Our pleasure. Obviously, let's get started talking about the Prairie Classic, and then we'll get, you know, into the scene in Regina, which is, I'm sure, a celebration of hockey all weekend long. But, you know, not the first outdoor game between the Pats and the Hitmen, if I'm not mistaken. They played one outdoors a couple of years ago. Is this one taking a little bit more of a buzz, maybe, because of the NHL game that's going alongside of it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it has that real big event feel, really, all week long. Since, I mean, as you guys know, when the NHL comes in and puts on an event, it's got that big game feel to it. And, you know, they've taken over the Everett Place grounds where the Rough Riders play and where the Pats rink is, and there's a ton of buzz. I mean, it doesn't get much better than this, in my opinion, being able to, you know, see the Flames and the Jets on a Saturday night, and for us to be able to partner with the NHL and put on this game. It's been an outstanding week, and we're looking forward to the game tonight and the game tomorrow afternoon.
Phil, we have to ask you about Max Paddock, obviously, with the Manitoba connection, and there have obviously been many others with Manitoba connections on the Pats, but Max Paddock, the son, of course, of former Jets GM John Paddock, now the Pats general manager, and he's had some injury problems for the Pats this year, but I believe he is going to start against the Calgary Hitmen, and I was reading that he's going to wear a commemorative mask that's going to be auctioned off for after the game. But can you just speak about Max Paddock, what he's meant for this Pats team? And I'm sure that he's been hearing a lot about the Jets 1.0 from his dad over the last couple days.
Yeah, I mean, he's a really outstanding kid. I mean, you go back, what, now 4 years, and he was just a short little guy. And if you guys have seen John or Max's dad, Russ, who, you know, played at the Olympics for Team Canada playing volleyball, I mean, they're guys that are like 6'3", 6'4". But Max in his Bantam draft year was just, you know, just a small kid. And for whatever reason, he fell in the draft. Pat's got him in the 10th round. And he grew and got better and better. And then at 17, when the Pats were hosting the Memorial Cup in 2018, had to make some moves and traded away a 20-year-old goaltender and, you know, brought in a 19-year-old who got hurt. And Max, at 17, took the ball and ran with it. I mean, he had the best numbers in Western Hockey League in the second half. That was 3 years ago. And played exceptionally well in the Memorial Cup and got the Pats to the final in that tournament. And then last year, obviously, the team lost a lot of guys from that team, and so it was a bit of a down year. But, you know, as far as the Pats went last season, that was as well as Max played. I mean, he's probably one of the two best players on his roster. And, you know, you mentioned this year some injury problems and, you know, just some weird things, like not massive things that have kept him out of the lineup, and that's kind of added up to being 2-10 so far this year. But, I mean, when you look at this roster and the way that they play and have to win games, you know, when Max is in there, they have a chance. He's an incredible young goaltender that we've been lucky to have for the last 3 years.
You know, Phil, we talked about it earlier in the show about the fact that this is a neutral site game for both Calgary and Winnipeg. So the buzz maybe in our cities isn't as significant, but we know in Regina and in greater Saskatchewan that there's a tremendous amount of buzz. So are folks really like excited on the ground, the ones that you're talking to, about both games? And is the WHL game getting the same sort of recognition? And then the second part of that question is, are they wearing any sort of different jerseys for the game, or are they wearing their normal uniforms?
Yeah, I'll say to that first that the Pats actually had some commemorative jerseys made just specifically for this game. They're red and you know, are kind of with the outdoor rink, and we have a military appreciation night every year because the Regina Pats are actually named after Princess Patricia's Canadian Light Infantry, so we have a real strong tie with the Canadian military. So those jerseys are a bit of a throwback, incorporating their colors and kind of an old school look to them. And those are going to be auctioned off as well after the game on Sunday. People will get their game worn jerseys. So we're really excited about that. And, you know, you talk about the buzz. I mean, this game's going to sell out tonight, this outdoor game, which I think speaks to how excited the people in Regina are to come and see this. I mean, you know, here in Saskatchewan, I think that a lot of people would cheer for one of these two teams, whether it be Calgary or Winnipeg. I mean, there's a lot of Oilers fans, too, I think, in this province. But, I mean, people are really excited to be able to have an event like this. And, you know, this is one of the reasons why you build a stadium like Mosaic Stadium and spend the money that the government did to get it in there. Because, you know, the Rough Riders are one thing, but to be able to host events like this and, you know, have Garth Brooks for two concerts earlier this year, that type of thing, I mean, this is what this building was made for. So it's going to be a great event tonight. And then, you know, for this WHL game tomorrow, we're sitting at almost 15,000 tickets sold for it. So, I mean, people are really excited to take this in. So, yeah, it's a really great weekend. And, you know, fans and sports fans here in Regina are really embracing it for sure.
Phil Andrews is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Flames tonight in the Heritage Classic, and then tomorrow afternoon, the Regina Pats, the team that Phil is the play-by-play broadcaster for, will face the Calgary Hitmen in the Prairie Classic. And you know, Phil, with this weekend sort of being a celebration of hockey in Saskatchewan, it's sort of amazing to think of the names of the legendary hockey players who come from Saskatchewan. You know, it's got the population that's, you know, a quarter of the size of Boston, Massachusetts. But when you name, you know, Gordie Howe, you know, one of the greatest of all times, you know, if not the greatest, Haley Wickenheiser, the greatest female player of all time, and then you go down and down and down the list of great hockey talent to come out of Saskatchewan.
Don't forget,
you
know, about the great coach Dave King either.
Dave King, of course, the legendary coach, you know. How do you explain it that, you know, Saskatchewan, with its sort of small population, is able to produce such oversized talent?
Yeah, it's incredible. They say by per capita that this province has produced more NHLers than anywhere in the world. I mean, it's hard to peg, except that it's an incredible hockey province. I mean, you think about all those guys that come, especially, those names that you mentioned, and that come from small town Saskatchewan that just had that, I don't know. I mean, going back to the glory days of hockey where, you know, you had to have that oomph, that desire to win. And I think that in Saskatchewan, I don't know, just is bred in everybody that, you know, grew up and played the game. I mean, it is uncanny that you would have all those names and continue to have names that, you know, from this province that play. And you know, it's just, this is a province that loves hockey and everybody plays and everybody wants to get better. So, yeah, it's something we certainly hang our hat on here in Saskatchewan.
And, Phil, even though there aren't any players from Saskatchewan on the Jets, won't be in the lineup tonight, J.C. LaPon is holding it down for Saskatchewan for the Moose. So even though he played for the Blazers, he's holding it down for the province of Saskatchewan. But, you know, I wanted to ask you about Sam Steele. I remember when we had you on the show a couple of years ago, you know, Sam Steele was absolutely tearing it up. I remember he had, I think it was 131 points a few years ago with the Regina Pats. He's still looking for his first goal of the season with the Ducks, but he's still keeping tabs on him and watching him as he tries to establish himself with the Ducks?
Yeah, I mean, last year he turned pro and had a great season in the hockey league and got called up for, what, the last 2 months of the Ducks season and played incredibly well. I think he scored 6 goals at the end of the year. Maybe I got that wrong, but that was incredible. And then dealt with some injuries, I think, in training camp this year, and I think he's only played 4 games for the Ducks, maybe 5, but he's got 3 assists, and, you know, he's a kid that is just an incredible talent. I mean, you don't put up 130 points in junior without being good at what you do, right? I mean, he's a franchise player. I mean, top 10 all-time pass scoring. And, you know, it's when you look at the Western Hockey League now and how it used to be, like Dale Dirtfatch is the all-time leading scorer, but, you know, you don't see guys with that high-end talent play 5 years in the league anymore, so I don't think he'll ever be touched. But, I mean, Sam was a guy that, you know, I got to watch play 300-plus games and go to a league final and, you know, Memorial Cup final where he was the MVP of that tournament in 2018. I mean, you just don't see guys like that come along very often. And it's translated into the pro level, and he's only going to get better because, I mean, I know it's cliche, but he's a kid that puts in the work that he just wants to be a hockey player, and he's fun to watch.
You know, Phil, in 2 weeks' time, the Regina Pats will be making their first trip, I believe, to Winnipeg to play the Winnipeg Ice for the first time. So what does that mean, having the Ice in the East Division? What is that rivalry going to look like down the line for these two squads?
You know what? I think it's really exciting, especially for the league to be in the Winnipeg market, just because of the size of it. I mean, it makes perfect sense when, you know, you have Edmonton and Calgary already with teams. I mean, it's exciting to be able to have them come into the division. Just looking where they are in their cycle, I mean, they're on the cusp of being, you know, one of the best teams in the Western Hockey League. They're already good right now, but you look at, you know, Connor Geeky and Matthew Savoy coming. I mean, they're going to be a tough out for this Pats club for 3 and 4 years down the road. I mean, it's exciting, especially once they get that new rink built there. It's only good for the league to have a team in a market like that. And I don't know what the rivalry is going to be like because it's kind of been teams at the opposite end of the spectrum, maybe I would say, over the last 4 years when they were in Kootenay and, you know, had some tough goes. And then now they're on the upswing and the Pats are kind of in that rebuilding phase after, you know, 4 or 5 years of some real success. So we'll see what the rivalry is like. But I know it's huge for Brandon being able to have that, you know, provincial rival and really close, whereas before Regina was their closest rival for the Wheat Kings. So I think it's huge for the league to be there. We're really excited to go and see that little rink for the first time. I imagine pretty good atmosphere with not a lot of room, but I imagine they're getting some fans in there. So, yeah, it's really good.
Phil Andrews is the Regina Pats play-by-play broadcaster. The Pats and the Hitmen will do battle in the Prairie Classic tomorrow afternoon. That'll come on the heels of tonight's Heritage Classic between the Jets and the Flames. Phil, appreciate your time and insight this morning. Thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy what'll be a great weekend of hockey in Regina.
I'm looking forward to it. Thanks, guys. Have a great one.
Take care, Phil. Thanks again. When we come back, we got one final segment to wrap up the program. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Yeah, Colorado Avalanche fans are holding their breath because nobody knows for sure. And you're absolutely right, James. You look at the video and you see the foot and the ankle twist, and it's not supposed to go that way. That's not a natural look. Ooh, boy, ugly.
That was ugly. TSN Hockey Insider Bob McKenzie talking about the ankle injury suffered by Mikko Rantanen. I guess the fact that he's week to week is, you know, the best case scenario. Although I'm not sure if week to week is true or if it's going to be, you know, 8 weeks to 12 weeks as opposed to 2 weeks to 4 weeks. It was an ugly injury there for Mikko Rantanen earlier this week where it looked like his ankle got put on backwards. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live Saturday morning here on TSN Radio 1290. The Jets and the Flames later on tonight. The Heritage Classic, a 9 p.m. puck drop. A game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. The Paul Maurice meeting with the media, as we knew entering the game, Ville Heinola going to be a healthy scratch for tonight. Tucker Pullman back into the lineup. And no decision yet, but a forward will meet the Winnipeg Jets in Anaheim when the Jets start their road trip on Tuesday night against the Ducks.
Right, and you know Dave mentioned this during the first hour. Most likely it would be Andre Chibasov or Juuna Luoto, because if you were to call up, you know, a Logan Shaw, for example, he would have to clear waivers on the way back, right? Yeah. So I would expect it to be Chibasov or Luoto. And, you know, look, we talked about it. We expected Anthony Boteto to be in the lineup. We expected Tucker Pullman to be in the lineup. And, you know, it looks like there's a good chance that, you know, Ville Heinola isn't going to play 10 games
right.
with the Jets. We thought he might stick around for 10 and then, you know, see what happens from there. But,
the writing seems to be on the wall that Ville Heinola is going to either go to the Manitoba Moose or going to go back overseas to Finland.
Mm-hmm.
I expect the team will want to keep him with the Moose because, well, frankly, if they have another injury, he's your next guy up again, isn't he?
I would think. Well, right now with the Moose, it's all a function of health, right?
Of course.
Like, look, Logan Stanley was not a guy the Jets were calling up anytime early in the season. Like,
no.
Maybe late in the season he'd get a game like we've seen guys get,
yeah.
But he's not playing anytime in the unless it's desperate times call for desperate measures.
The next reality call is, ups from the Moose are Cam Schilling or Nelson Noje.
Right. And or obviously a healthy Sammy Niku. But
Yes. Yeah,
provided Sammy Niku is still on the fence, you know, mending,
yeah.
then it's going to be either Nelson Noje or Cam Schilling.
Both
players who require waivers. To go back.
Right, absolutely. But, I mean, you sort of expect that you'd be able to get Cam Schilling or Noje back and forth through waivers. I mean,
yeah,
nobody took him so far. Those are just sort of, every organization has depth defensemen of that nature. Although,
right.
Nelson Noje, I mean, you know, this is a guy who basically missed, was it all of last year?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he, you know, 2 years ago, he played pretty well for the Jets. You know, and then he had that bad shoulder injury. So I think there still might be something to be seen with Nelson Noje. Obviously not going to become a difference maker, but I think there's still maybe, you know, bottom pairing NHL talent there that's, you know, needs a
you
little bit
more
time.
You said 2 years ago, it was 2 years ago he missed.
Right, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Sorry. But
last year he played.
Last year he played. That's what I meant, yeah.
Can we talk about Mikko Rantanen?
If you want. I mean, go ahead.
Wasn't that the point of the segment?
We can talk about the Jets too. I mean, you know,
we played the clip at the top of the segment, so.
Talk about Mikko Rantanen.
Well, I mean, it's just really unfortunate that, you know, he's injured because he was, what did he have, 12 points in 8 games? And, mm-hmm. you know, he signed the bridge contract. I mean, we were obviously watching him and Lion A. Connor, all the other RFAs, Matthew Tkachuk, who we're obviously going to see tonight against the Jets. But, you know, just really unfortunate. But, you know, we talked about it a few segments ago. I mean, they really haven't missed him. They won their last game 6-1.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, a guy like JT Compher, you know, he's going to get, you know, an increased role. But, you know, I just think Joe Sakic has done such a good job reshaping that Avalanche roster. I love that second line with Kadri, Burakovsky, and Jonas Donskoy. And that third line right now, Matthew Nieto, Tyson Jost, and Valeri Nichushkin, who obviously is still looking for his first goal in the last 3 years. But the point is, the Avalanche have a lot of depth. And then you've got Brandon Boy, Matt Calvert, along with Pierre-Edward Belmar there on the fourth line with Vladislav Hamenev. So, tons of depth on the Avalanche. So, I think they're going to be fine without Rantanen.
To your point about that Avalanche second line, that's a great case of a proactive general manager doing some great work in that he acquired all, you know, two of those three guys via trade, Burakovsky and Kadri, via trade. And Donskoy is sort of an under-the-radar free agent signing on July 1st. So, boom, you build a second line, you know, by being able to trade and then being able to sort of buy low on a unrestricted free agent a little bit.
This is why we have to be careful of this instant gratification society we live in, because
we were firing him a couple years
ago. Don't you remember everybody was firing Joe Sakic and he was the worst general manager of all time, and suddenly now he's the greatest general manager. So it's like a lot of things. You got to evaluate it over the course of a specific period of time, because you just can't. That's why I can't stand when you have winners and losers. It just doesn't make sense.
It's not a snapshot.
How do you know? You don't know what the player is going to do. There's still performance to happen. So to me, Joe Sakic's reign of
so he's a winner.
Terror is now a winner.
Yeah.
He's a winner.
Cheers. Congratulations.
She's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something straight like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Ezra Ginsburg, are you cheering or jeering?
I always cheer.
I know you always cheer.
I'm going to cheer Patty Marlowe. I mean, 1,500 games with the San Jose Sharks, regardless of what Mike Babcock said about him playing his last year in Toronto. I mean, just Patrick Marlowe, you look at his longevity year after year. He plays every single game. In my opinion, he's a Hall of Famer. I realize he hasn't won the Stanley Cup, but just look at his consistency. Just his offensive statistics have been so consistent. He's 40 years old, and, you know, he's still contributing. I think he's a point per game in his first six games with the Sharks. So I'm cheering Patty Marlowe. I'm from Saskatchewan, boys. So, you know, it's apropos with the Jets playing in Regina tonight. So that's an easy one for me.
Dave Minuk.
I am cheering our brothers and sisters in Saskatchewan this fine day because I think that prairie folk always support these types of events, whether it's Manitoba or Saskatchewan. And there's a good-natured rivalry between folks from Manitoba and Saskatchewan. But at the end of the day, we all live on the prairies. And I think that the people down in Regina and Saskatoon in general are doing a really good job putting on a show for folks from around the world today in Regina and tomorrow.
That's it for this Saturday morning.
No cheer or jeer from you, Drew?
No time. We ran out of time. I'll save it for next week. I'll do two next week. If you would stop talking so much, I would have had time.
You should just cheer me for how good I was on the show.
Yeah, that's a jeer if you ask me. That's it for this Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our guests, Phil Andrews, George Johnson, Paul Edmonds, and Joe Piscucci. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on tsn1290.ca. It's on illegalcurve.com. It's wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, get it sent to your device automatically. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. They support the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, so you should support them. Big props to producer Sean Assor, doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsburg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.